my name is Linda Abraham, and I am the president of Accepted.com and the moderator for this morning's webinar. I guess I should say today's webinar, depends on where you're located. I want to welcome all of you to Four Essentials in an Executive MBA Application to be presented by Accepted.com's editors, Cindy Tokimitsu and Jen Weld. Before we start, a few housekeeping items. We're going to ask a few questions during the presentation and either ask you to raise your hand in response to the question or to respond to the question in the question box at the bottom of your dashboard. You can raise your hand, if that's what you're asked to do, by clicking on the hand icon, two icons underneath the horizontal orange arrow on your control panel. It should be to the left and a little above the words audio mode. Please raise your hand now when you find it. Okay. You guys know what you're doing. We had somebody on a Q&A recently who thought he had to physically raise his hand in front of his camcorder, and everybody was watching him, but that's not what we mean. We just mean that little icon. So most of you have found it. I hope the rest of you will find it shortly. And in terms of the question box, we'll get to that in a minute. Then, you know, so we'll ask you some questions, but what about your questions? We have left a lot of time at the end of the presentation, the formal presentation, for questions, and we will answer as many of them as we possibly can then. If you have a general question and we run out of time before answering it today, you can post it on Accepted's Facebook page at facebook.com/accepted or in our forums at forums.accepted.com. We'll be checking both those venues for questions today, as we always do. At the end of the presentation, we will announce a special offer for those of you who are here today, and so stick around to hear what that is. And when you leave, you will receive a brief survey. Please, please fill it out. We value your feedback. It helps us plan future webinars, future events, and also to improve those that we're giving. Finally, and most importantly, it gives me great pleasure to introduce our wonderful presenters, Jen Weld, who will present first, served for 4 years as Assistant Director of Admissions at Cornell's EMBA program and joined Accepted in 2010. Cindy Tokimitsu, who will present next, joined Accepted in 1998. Since then, she has helped our clients get accepted to top MBA and EMBA programs. She's also co-authored with me The Consultant's Guide to MBA Admissions, The Finance Professional's Guide to MBA Admission Success, and the EMBA Edge, along with numerous articles, special reports, and e-courses on MBA admissions. During the webinar, Jen will reveal what admissions readers look for in EMBA applications, and Cindy will discuss how to make sure you provide those four essentials. Before turning it over to Jen, however, I want to ask you, the audience, and I'd like you to post your responses in the question box. What qualities do you think are essential in an EMBA application? Again, please post your responses in the question box at the bottom of your dashboard. I'm going to give you a second or two to do that. Okay, please post your responses. Naveen has responded, leadership and management. Very good. Anybody else want to respond? Leadership ability, analytical mindset. Anybody else want to give a guess as what's essential? We have two from each of you. We're talking about four essentials. So commitment, very good. Somebody's been reading ahead or saw my video online about EMBA applications. Accomplishments, very good. And now, clear view of career objectives, excellent, excellent. I think some of these you're definitely going to hear about from Jen and Cindy. And without further ado, Jen, could you please take it away?
The average profile of an executive MBA candidate, typically an individual has about 10 to 15 years of work experience over time moving into progressively higher leadership roles. They're not looking at full-time programs because they wish to stay within their company, apply learning on the job, or financially it just doesn't make sense to take the time off of work and the opportunity cost is just too high. And in many cases, students do have company support. An average candidate has a lot of depth in a particular area, whether that be operations, finance, marketing, so on and so forth, and they're looking for more breadth as they, again, move into progressively higher leadership roles. And this is not a one-size-fits-all profile, but it gives you a general sense of what an executive MBA classroom looks like. For those of you who are listening today who have more non-traditional backgrounds, doctors, lawyers, architects, have no fear. In fact, you're probably more coveted than you'd realize, because admissions committees always look to bring a very wide array of experiences into the classroom, because it helps with overall classroom learning. So unique backgrounds are very, very well received. So what makes a good executive MBA candidate? Primary component would be academic readiness, and that can be seen in a lot of different areas. Primary, obviously, is undergraduate GPA, courses taken, how well you performed in them, particularly in areas of quantitative skills, where GMATs and or GREs are required. Strong scores in that area are a good indicator. Postgraduate coursework, recognize that you had some weakness in your undergraduate degree and you'd like to address that prior to applying to a program. That's a great thing to consider doing, because it gives the admissions committee an additional point of reference in terms of your overall readiness to participate in the program. And certifications such as a CPA, CFA, et cetera, those are also excellent indicators. A track record of increasing responsibility over time, so you know, starting out in an entry-level position but moving into managerial role. And a career path that makes sense. Now, I'm sure no one on the line today has the exact profile as this chart, but it gives you a sense of what, you know, kind of upward mobility an ADCOM would be looking at. So, for example, or you also might have, if you have a non-traditional background, again, don't be concerned about that. You know, if you've bounced around into
a couple of different functions,
but wherever you've landed now, hopefully you're at a point in your career where you can show some upward mobility. Goals and objectives that synchronize with an MBA education, essentially where you can build a story where you can't get from point A to point B without the skill set that you would get in an MBA. So, for example, perhaps your company is grooming you for a C-level position, you're missing key skills in particular subject areas, and you need to fill that gap. Or you're interested in starting your own business, but you need the MBA toolkit in order to succeed. Somebody mentioned commitment. That is really, really important to recognize in the application process. You know, in addition to your career, your family, and other activities that you are already engaged in, you're about to add approximately, probably depending on the program you're looking at, 2 years of education. And that, you know, it's not just time inside the classroom, but there's lots of expectations of you outside the classroom in terms of, you know, homework and additional things that activities, so on and so forth, that are part of the program. And just a recognition that there is a significant effort involved, and, you know, not being afraid to recognize that in an application, in an essay, or in an interview situation. You don't want to go into this with rose-colored glasses, because it's a big challenge. Finally, showing sincere interest in the program. Now, admissions committee members recognize that reputation, location, and schedule might be primary motivators for applicants to the program. However, they're pretty much universal, and they're very superficial. So you really need to take the time to dive into the program and really make the case as to why this particular program is of interest to you. So where you can, you know, gain knowledge of the program, obviously the website's a great place to start. You should certainly be encouraged to talk to admissions officers. A lot of programs now, and when I was at Cornell, we had the same setup, offer pre-assessment. So you can send in your resume, get some informal feedback on whether or not now is the right time for you to consider the program. I would highly recommend you take advantage of that, because in either there were situations where people were completely relieved to think that they were actually ready for the program based on our assessment, or others who, you know, we gave guidelines to, you know, not right now, but in the meantime, why don't you do X, Y, and Z and come back to us in a couple years, and that was helpful advice for them as well. So where that's offered, I would certainly encourage you to do that. And finally, you know, going to an open house, a school visit, information session, learning or to taking the time to speak to current students, alumni, just anywhere where you can make that personal point of contact and learn more insider information about the program is very helpful. The way you can show you've taken the time is with curriculum. Most executive MBA programs have a general management focus, but several have a specific concentrations that might be relevant for your particular goals and objectives. You could talk about that. Are there particular courses that you're interested in? And again, be careful here to not be superficial in that you went to the curriculum page and you picked off two courses and those seem particularly interesting and you just happen to place them into your essay. You know, just make sure you have meaningful reasons as to why these particular courses are interesting to you. Career services and understanding of what is and is not offered in the program. Career services is an ever-evolving subject area with executive MBA programs as students become more and more self-sponsored as opposed to company-sponsored. So each program, there are probably some similarities with every program you're looking at, but there are also probably some differences. One thing that's really important to recognize is that most programs do not allow executive MBA students to participate in their full-time recruiting program, and that's for a whole myriad of reasons. But so that's something that's important. You don't want to come to the table and say, well, I can't wait to participate because I know McKinsey comes on campus and I really want a job with them. Like, that's just, again, very superficial and just doesn't show your overall understanding of kind of what the program is about. Professors, if you know of a particular faculty, their research or other reference points, mention it if it's relevant and meaningful. So be careful, again, of superficial. Professor Smith and Professor Jones are renowned in their fields, and I can't wait to take their courses. You know, again, that just doesn't tell anything. Again, that says you took the time to go to the website and potentially just picked two professors off there and said you can't wait to take the course. Experiential opportunities. Most programs do offer projects, et cetera, or other things that take place outside the classroom, like an international trip, an entrepreneurship project, clubs, other social activities. Take the time to learn about that, and if it's relevant, talk about how that works into your interest in the program. And finally, learning teams. Most schools typically have a particular model of how they set up teams in the course of the program. Learn about what that is and talk about how that's relevant to your learning experience and what excites you about that. So that is my section. I'm going to hand it back to Linda, who in turn will hand it off to Cindy.
All right. Thank you very, very much, Jen. It was very informative. If you have questions for Jen, please hold them until after Cindy presents her part of the webinar. Again, we'll have lots and lots of time for questions then. So don't worry. We definitely want to get to your questions. Cindy, we look forward to hearing from you now about how we can ensure, how the audience can ensure that the essentials are in their EMBA application.
Thanks. Well, I will start with the easiest, which is academic readiness. There's not a whole lot you have to do on this point. Just be sure that your transcripts and, if required, your score reports get there on time. So all I would add to that is if you do believe that your academic record doesn't reflect your actual abilities, you may want to write the optional essay briefly, just explaining why, and there's no need to be dramatic or defensive about it. Just make your case and then move on. But otherwise, we can move into the other areas. They're a little bit more complex to deal with. So I'll start with how you demonstrate career readiness. And there are two key areas in the application where you will demonstrate your career readiness, and that's the resume and the essays. And in the resume, it's a very important piece. It gives the admissions committee the overall picture. I liken it to an aerial view. They can really see your career trajectory in one sweep. So obviously everybody has a resume and it conveys certain essential information, you know, your dates, what you did this here, you did that then, etc. However, it can do a lot more than that in terms of demonstrating your career, that you are at the level appropriate for the EMBA. And if you clarify three particular things in the resume, it'll serve that purpose very well. And those three things are your decision-making scope, the scope of your people management, and P&L responsibility. And if you can quantify all of those three, that's even better. And ideally, for the decision-making aspect and for people management, also try to clarify that through examples or specific accomplishments. And so that's for the resume, and that's the macro view. And then the essays give you a further chance to demonstrate your career readiness in multiple ways. And one is in just your selection of topics and experiences when you're telling your stories. I mean, depending on the set of essays, you'll be, aside from the goals essay, you'll be discussing all just numerous aspects of your experience. You may be asked to comment directly by providing a story about a leadership, or you may be asked to describe your most important skills and talents, or there are multiple types of questions that you'll encounter, but in almost all cases, in your answers, you will have to choose topics and then choose stories to answer those questions. So when you choose those topics and experiences to write about, select those that place you or show you to be performing at a high level. They should be fairly recent ones and showing you to be, again, performing at a high level, interacting with senior level people, either at your company or at a client, managing professionals, weighing or having input on strategic issues. These are the types of experiences that you want to choose when you're answering your essay questions. So that'll consistently reinforce throughout the application the high level that you're working at. How important is this? I had an experience last year, I think it was, when I actually had a very young EMBA applicant who happened to be working at this level, and actually someone in his mid-20s who was accepted to a top EMBA program, and I am convinced that the reason for that acceptance was the fact that we did this relentlessly, basically, just placing him in those situations in the essays where he was doing, making strategic decisions or interacting with various high-level people. And so, I think that's probably probably one of the most important things you can do in the application. If you can't do that, then, if you don't have this element, then probably the other elements are not as important. So the goals essay is the other, or I'd say rather, your goals themselves are also another way that you can demonstrate your career readiness, because your goals will be flowing out of where you are now. So actually, I think Jen had a great slide where she gave a kind of step-by-step sort of a career progress picture, and you can kind of envision that as continuing for your goals. You should be describing goals that are logical and flow out of where you are now, and that should ideally they should be approaching fairly soon a senior management level. So that's really what the MBA curriculum is tailored to, is to help you get up to that senior level. So it's important to show that. And in the goals essays, to be credible and to be meaningful in portraying that those next steps, you need to use facts and specific details. For example, positions and job titles, functions, delineate your anticipated responsibilities. Also, if your company has specific plans for you to take these steps, by all means mention it in the essay, where you can work that in. It's a nice touch, and it just underscores the credibility. Now, these are the basics that are required to make that goals essay do the job and demonstrate your readiness, and also demonstrate the credibility for the fact that you need the EMBA. But there's a couple of things you can do to make that essay a little bit more compelling than just doing the job, and that is to convey also your vision, which is really what you want to accomplish. You know, what do you want your legacy to be as you go through this career path? And also your motivation. Why do you want to do this? Why does it excite you? And often those two, the vision and the motivation, are intertwined, but I guarantee you, after reading tons and tons of essays, that the difference that those two elements can make, even if it's no more than a sentence or two, is just huge. So in terms of making the essay memorable. So also, in the goals essay, don't overlook where you are right now. These two, even if you're not anticipating a promotion in the next 2 to 3 years, you can still have goals for your current position, and those goals are going to be very relevant to the admissions committee, because that's what you'll be bringing to the classroom as you work on those, trying to achieve those goals. That's also where you will be applying what you're learning day to day. So feel free to elaborate, even if it's not going to be through a promotion, do try to articulate some goals for your current situation, or rather for the role that you'll be taking while you're pursuing the EMBA. Well, let's now discuss how you show commitment to the process and commitment to the program. There are two parts to doing this, and the first is your understanding of what the program entails in terms of time commitment and effort, and the second is your ability to make the necessary adjustments. I know Wharton's EMBA set of essays has, for many years, had one question that actually addresses this and asks about this point and this point only. And most of the time, you will not have that opportunity in an application to just single it out and address it directly. So it takes a little art to weave it in. I found that the ideal place to weave a brief discussion of showing your commitment to the process and program is in the Why EMBA or Why the Program section of the goals essay. It tends to sort of flow naturally there. While you're discussing your understanding of the program, you can highlight perhaps a couple of things. Maybe, okay, I know there are going to be these team projects on every so often on the weekends or such and such, and so you could sort of gracefully just clarify to the admissions committee through in that section that you understand what the requirements are. And then also, in terms of demonstrating how you're going to meet those commitments, be specific. Don't just say that you're committed and that's nice, but it's going to be a lot more credible, again, if you give an example or two. So at work, presumably, it's going to be eating into your work time, the studies, so you'll be grooming some people to delegate more responsibilities to. Or perhaps you may have to put those triathlons on hold for a little while or something. But be specific. And sometimes, you can add a little humor in there. It's a way to sometimes personalize the essay if you mention, you can bring in a little slice of your life there and what something you'll have to put on hold. It can just add a nice touch. So the last section, and relating back to Jen's presentation, is, you needing to show interest in the actual program itself. I will kind of underscore a point that she mentioned, which is, and it may seem obvious, but I'll tell you why I have to underscore it in a minute. It is an academic program, and that should be the focus of your interest in discussing why the program. And the reason I say that that I have to emphasize it is because I actually see very often it is almost the last thing mentioned, or it's mentioned sort of in a cursory way after people discuss the convenience of the program or the great networking opportunities or such and such, which is, as Jen said, that's not really what that's not going to give the admissions committee a lot of confidence that you're really passionate about the core purpose of the program. We're talking about major academic programs in world-class universities, and so that needs to be the focus. So how do you demonstrate interest in the specific academic program? Well, you go back to your goals. Think about as you look at your goals, what do you need to learn to do them, or what do you need to learn better to do them that you really don't know now, or you don't really see that you can do learn on your own? Well, those things that you want to learn are your learning needs, and those learning needs in turn will drive your interest in the program and help you identify areas within the program as in terms of its academic curriculum of exactly how you're going to learn what you need to learn to do those things. So focusing on the academic areas first, you can talk about, it'll differ program to program. And the same person, maybe it's going to be professors at one program that really spark their interest, or in another program, the same person might find that it's the curriculum structure. So really delve into each program very closely. But again, some of those areas are professors, the curriculum structure, the teaching methodologies. Sometimes there are projects that are really germane to the academic component, and you can discuss those. So those are the core academic areas. So other things, after you discuss those academics, and in the context of your goals, and I suggest linking them consistently back to your goals and really what you want to achieve, then you can also discuss other things that might interest you, such as possibly clubs or the logistics and why the program works for you, or possible aspects of the networks, or sometimes their international outings and so forth. I have a few just pet cliches that I want to toss out there to just spare you a little bit of effort in trying to, you know, editing your work so that you can avoid these in the first place. And I think even Jen alluded to one or two of them, but try to avoid phrases like the following: renowned professors, world-class program, top-ranked reputation. And I was thinking last night, and there was another one that kind of I'm going to add to the list. It doesn't apply to every program, but I hear an awful lot about people being impressed by the Nobel laureates at various schools. And you know, not really saying one thing about why that, what that Nobel laureate is going to help them learn to achieve their goals. So, you know, try to avoid those kind of pat cliches, and instead go back to those specifics and dig into how they're going to help you achieve your goals. Last but not least, if you have had an opportunity to talk to current or former students at a particular program or other people connected to the program, by all means, in terms of showing your interest, add it and discuss it in the goals essay, or where you're discussing the or whatever essay you are using to explain your interest in the program. If you do that, don't just say that you had a nice conversation with so and so and that they were very kind, but also add a little tidbit of insight that you've gained from them and why it's relevant to you. It doesn't have to be a world shape, you know, just a, you know, massively important thing. It can be a small little detail, but just some aspect of further understanding how that program is going to help you. Maybe it's the way that they use the program that gave you some insight into how its potential value. But that's a really nice element, and it personalizes the essay and also just demonstrates that you are actively engaged with the program. And, well, I guess that concludes my section. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Cindy. Really appreciate it. I want to, I think that Jen and Cindy have provided you with the information you need, both in terms of what should be in your application and how to get it there. But that's general, that's theory. Can everybody hear me? Because I'm getting some feedback that the sound on my end is not working properly. So can you just let me know if you can hear me? Okay, great. Thank you so much. Great. Thank you. Okay, so we can help you. The point is we can help you. We can help you ensure that your essentials are in your EMB application. We provide a wonderful critical eye, a supportive but critical eye, enormous professional experience that we would bring to your application. We can critique what you have already written, or we can help you, guide you actually in terms of what should be included, and then edit what you have written. We know the EMB admissions process. We've been advising EMB applicants since 1994. We'd be more than happy to help you. At the same time, all three of us recognize that you may still wonder, you may like the presentation, you might like the information presented here, you may still wonder, how can we really benefit you? And we're going to make it easy for you to try us out. We're going to offer $100 off the first hour of consulting or editing. This is a fantastic chance for new clients to try out our services at a deep, deep discount. Just use coupon code EMBA100. Act fast, because this offer expires at the end of the month, and of course your deadlines are approaching, so there's no motivation or no good reason to procrastinate. The key URLs are up on your screen. What I'd suggest you do is click on them, open up the additional tabs that you can look at later, and for now, send us your questions so that Jen and Cindy can respond to them. This is your opportunity? Okay, Brian has asked a question for Jen. Does the pre-assessment serve as a good indicator of probability of admission?
I would say if you're given the green light to apply, you certainly have a greater than average chance of being accepted to the program, because there's really no motivation for an admissions officer to give you the green light to apply when if there's not much chance of you being accepted. Because why would an ADCOM member want to set themselves up to waste their time in advance if there's already little likelihood that you'll be accepted? Now, obviously, you have to put together a strong application package, and usually an interview is required. So, you know, just basing it solely on a telephone conversation in your resume, you know, is not the entire picture, but it certainly does improve your chances.
Would also be fair to say that if one is discouraged from applying, that should be taken very seriously?
Should definitely be taken very seriously.
Yeah.
And
okay.
In fact, it's a big turnoff if the assessment is given in such a way and the person does apply anyway.
Yeah, I can imagine that. We also have a question here, also for Jen. What type of non-typical backgrounds did you accept while on the admissions committee?
I mentioned earlier doctors, lawyers, and architects. Those were kind of some of the more unique backgrounds that people brought in. But
the typical non-traditional or the typical non-typical?
The typical non-typical, right?
Yeah.
But again, you know, I mean, everybody, regardless of background, has something unique potentially to bring to the classroom setting. You don't want an entire classroom full of finance people or marketing people or, you know, the broader learning experience. What we always said at Cornell was, you know, you want to learn just as much from your classmates as you do from teachers or professors that teach in the program, and a great way to do that is to put together as diverse a group as possible.
Great.
Melinda?
Ryan? Yes, Cindy?
Could I just add one quick point?
Sure,
to that?
Of course.
Because there's one profile, again, another typical, non-typical. I mean, obviously, entrepreneurs is one whole area. That's becoming more typical these days. But there's a type of professional, technology professional that I've worked with here and now and again, where they're really a star in their organization. They've had primarily a technical role, but they've risen way to the top in that arena, and they are going to, and they've sort of, I guess, in some ways dealt with strategic issues, but from the technological area. And when they're ready to go into management, they're not going to go into lower-level management. They're going to go in at a fairly high level. So that's one other atypical profile that I've seen with some, you know, not tons, but with some consistency. I just want to throw that out.
Great. Thank you. Okay.
One other one. There was a veterinarian.
A vet also? All right. Stone Love asks, how would you feel about someone who interviewed, but perhaps the applicant didn't feel the interview went well and decided to apply later and request a re-interview?
The way the Cornell program works was interviews came after the application. I know there are lots of programs now that have the interview beforehand, so I don't have as much expertise, so I'm going to let Linda and or Cindy respond to that if you guys have any insight.
I don't think you would be penalized for that, Stone Love, but I can tell you that applicants routinely think interviews did not go well when they went just fine. That is one of the most common reactions after an interview, even for people who have interviewed many, many, many times. I hear this all the time. I really don't think my interview went well. I really don't think my interview went well. And I hear also from admissions committee people who say, you know, I've even occasionally gotten a call. One time in particular, I got a call from an applicant, not a regular MBA applicant, but slightly more mature maybe than a typical MBA applicant. And he said that the interviewer really was not paying attention to him. He wasn't interested in him. He felt that the behavior was non-professional, really, and egregiously off. So I said, well, if you want, I can call the admissions committee director and ask him what he thinks you should do. And by the time I got in touch with the, I called, and by the time he got in touch with me, and we were both on the telephone at the same time, he said, well, have the client get in touch with me. So I emailed the client, and he had been accepted the day before. So, again, I don't think anybody would hold it against you that, if you didn't feel an interview went well, but I would try and be very critical of that feeling, very, very suspicious of that feeling. James asks, how much does a company's financial sponsorship weigh into the admissions decision? And I have a follow-up. Jen, I guess that's for you. And Cindy, I have a follow-up question for you.
Okay.
It played no role whatsoever because, we understood that in this day and age, there are companies that are able to offer this kind of support, but this kind of benefit tends to be waning in a lot of organizations. So it had no bearing whatsoever in our admissions decision.
Have you ever, Cindy, have you ever help somebody prepare a proposal to their employer, like requesting sponsorship? And do you have any tips for that?
Yes, I have occasionally. And in terms of, I think you have to be very concrete in terms of, what value you're going to bring to the company during and in those few years after. You don't want to look too far out because in this day and age it's really not that realistic, but during your program and then in those few years afterwards, what concrete benefits you're going to bring. And it is a very delicate, there's no doubt about it, it's a kind of delicate dance in terms of their commitment and giving you time and possibly funding, and then also then your commitment, what is your commitment going to be to them. So I think that's something also for people. I've also have had actually clients who have been offered funding and actually didn't take it because they didn't want to be tied. So you have to really think about your commitment and what you're willing to commit the whole business environment is so volatile right now that it's really important to think this issue through on a number of levels before maybe making a proposal. But think about that part carefully for yourself before you decide what you want to propose to your company in terms of what you'll be willing to commit to.
Great,
and
thank you.
To build on, we actually at Cornell we created a document called the Case for Sponsorship, which we encouraged students who were looking to get company support to take to the right influencers, to give them or to give them talking points in order to encourage sponsorship in the program. So, if anything, we were trying to help applicants, and not again. No bearing whatsoever in terms of whether or not they had 100% sponsorship, 50% sponsorship, or 0%. But we knew that it would obviously significantly reduce your financial hardship if you did get support, so we were always trying to help prospective students in that regard.
Also, I think some of the EMBA program websites now have some sections for potential sponsors, and I can't name them offhand, but it's something to check out.
I think Wharton also had a document similar to what you mentioned, Jen. I remember it was very good. They had like a document that you could use as a template or a couple of pages, and the key is to present benefits to the employer from the sponsorship to make a cost-benefit argument. that the benefit of having you there with these new skills is going to exceed the cost. Sanjay asks, how is an applicant best advised to handle an academic record that doesn't reflect the subsequent track record of career growth and achievements into present mid-level management positions? Jen, you want to take that first?
So I guess I want a little bit of clarification. So just in terms of an academic background that is significantly different from the career path that was chosen?
I think the academic, from what I understood the question means, and Sanjay, please confirm, that he progressed very well once he started working, but his grades weren't that good.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, in that case, you know, if there is some weakness in your quantitative background in your undergraduate program, again, I would strongly recommend that you take your proactive in addressing that, and you know, consider taking a college algebra course, a statistics course, an accounting course, something like that, at a community college that shows that your academics subsequent to your undergraduate experience, you know, are up to snuff. And that you're ready to participate in a program. There were times when applicants would come with weak academic backgrounds, but, you know, they had great work experience, but we just wanted to make sure. I mean, it's way too late once you join the program to wish you'd taken the time to brush up on your algebra skills, because once the program starts, there's clearly no time to brush up on those skills. And so if you're not coming to the program from day one prepared, it's a real detriment to you. And so we would sometimes tell people, you know, you're conditionally accepted provided that you take a course in X and receive a grade of, you know, B or better or whatever prior to joining the program.
Great, thank you. Cindy, do you have anything to add there?
I mean, I guess the only point I would add is if you're applying to programs that do not require a standardized test, sometimes you can address that issue by still taking the test. Sometimes they'll still accept a score if you bring one. So if you say, take the GMAT or GRE and do very well in the quantitative section particularly, then that will also help address that.
That's true. And Cornell, actually, we were not a program that required, and they still are not a program that requires the GMAT. And so there were times where, you know, I kind of give a buffet of options that, you know, taking a course would probably be your best bet, because it would specifically address the math that would be related to the coursework once you start. However, a strong GMAT score would also alleviate our concerns.
Great. Thank you. Thank you both. Stone Love asks, how do EMBA programs view active entrepreneurs as an applicant who may have just started a business? Jen, why don't you start with that one, and then Cindy, I have a follow-up question for you.
There's certainly no negative in terms of an entrepreneur, and it makes complete sense as to why you'd want to sort of in tandem, you know, you're starting up your business and you're realizing, wow, there are some critical skills that I'm missing, and an MBA really helps fill that gap. And so I think that's a very logical reason for coming to a program. And it is certainly encouraged.
Go ahead.
I have a point, just because I've worked with a lot of entrepreneurs who have applied and applied successfully. I have noticed, and this is just general, so maybe Jen, you know, you might actually have a comment on this, but most of the time, if they're applying to an EMBA program, they've actually gotten their company up to a certain level where they're sort of dealing with things on a scale that maybe their classmates are dealing with. So they're really at a level where the company's grown pretty fast, and they now, it's just beyond their ability to just one person sort of managing it, or they already have a number of professional level employees. Mm-hmm. So that's, I mean, I've worked with quite a number of entrepreneurs at that level, and maybe they've had their business going for, you know, a few years or something. So I don't know, I don't know really how it would work as well if you're really just starting at the same time. I think that would be a little harder in my view. I don't know, Jen, I'd be interested in your thought on that.
Well, I think, I mean, it would certainly be a challenge because obviously startup costs and time associated therewith are pretty substantial, you know, right at the beginning. So I guess there potentially could be some concern of how realistically time commitment you'd be able to give to the program when you are getting your business up and running. So I guess that is a potential concern. I would say that would be a perfect opportunity for you to talk to admissions folks at the particular school you're looking at and just say, you know, kind of lay out what your goals and objectives are, and is this the right time for me, or, you know, should I consider coming back in a year or two, and kind of get their specific feedback, because obviously everybody's situation is different.
That's a good point.
The other thing, this kind of relates to that commitment essential that both Jen and Cindy discussed earlier. You, as somebody who runs a business, I think Jen's point in particular that you want the business at a certain level when you start the EMBA program, the school's going to want to know that you have perhaps delegated some responsibilities or made some time in your schedule. They don't want to think that you're going to be on your smartphone in the hall managing your business when you should be in a study group or in class or working on a project or something like that. So I think, as Jen said, entrepreneurship or starting a business makes perfect sense in terms of a reason for an MBA. Suddenly you need skills you don't have. At the same time, I think it's probably more important that you include some of those credible details that Cindy and Jen spoke about in terms of showing that you're committed to the program and you've made changes in how you've structured your business so that you'll be able to fully participate in it. Now, Ryan has a question here. This might be something that is, I'm not sure we can deal with in this forum. We might just need more information. But his question is, in terms of work experience, how important is it that work experience be post-bachelor's degree? Most of my management level experience happens to be pre-bachelor's. Is that an admissions killer? Jen, you want to take that?
This is somebody who started working for several years and then went back to school, I presume?
Apparently finished his degree, yeah, later on, and then continued working. Ryan, yeah, he says right. Could you just indicate, did you continue at a management level after you got your bachelor's as well? I mean, I think that would be yes, okay. So the career progression continued on an upward arc, correct?
I mean, that's not a concern. In fact,
okay. Yes.
What's good is if the degree is actually relatively recent and the grades were good, then that's actually a really good indicator that the person is ready to participate in the program, as well as the fact that I presume the degree, or in most cases, people are going to school to get their undergraduate degree while they're still working, so they've already worked out the whole time management issue and commitment, and that's also a good positive as well.
Yes, yeah, he confirmed that exactly what we thought. So, okay, good. Thank you. Stone Love asks, when is the best time to apply to a program? First round, second round, or final round? If so, will you please go into a bit of detail about the pros and cons? Cindy, I know that, you know, I'm sure you've seen this. Do you have an opinion on this one?
I would say generally first and second round. I mean, third round, it's not quite as, it's a little different. I don't think it's really as much of an issue for the EMBA as it is for the regular MBA. I've, you know, worked with many third round applicants who've been admitted, and I just feel that you don't have the volumes and volumes of applicants, and at the same time, just EMBA applicants are so busy. I mean, as I often say, MBA applicants think they're the busiest people in the world, and EMBA applicants are the busiest people in the world. So no matter how, you know, much they wanted to get things done that first and second, I mean, it's just, you know, they have to take a lot of people third round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so audience, how many of you feel validated with that comment? You can raise your hands on that one. How many of you feel validated that you're the busiest people on the planet, even busier than the MBAs? Just raise your hands. Oh, we're getting a lot of participation here now.
Glad to see that's. I still can't believe people actually do it, even though I've been helping them for all these years. So
yeah.
I'm always amazed. It's pretty impressive.
Right. Okay. All right. Were you going to say more in response to the question, though, Cindy? I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, I really don't think it's that much of an issue. I just think it helps to get going earlier, or more for your own sake. I don't think there's that much of a competitive issue the way there is for the MBAs in terms of that third round being, you know, being much, much more competitive. At least I haven't seen it. So, you know, it's a good idea to get started early because, you know, Murphy's Law, I mean, things are going to happen and you'll get waylaid. But, you know, basically, you know, so... I don't think it's a major problem. And, you know, I don't know if, Jen, maybe you see it differently, but that's been my experience so far. So.
Yeah, I agree. Cornell's program is actually the rolling admissions. And what surprised me when I first started was that actually the busiest time of year was March, April, May, which struck me as so late because the program started at the end of July. But sort of over time, I realized that it made sense because people are scrambling, you know, with the potential they're going to get a promotion between now and then, and maybe they're not going to be able to commit to the program, you know, for another year. And they're still looking for company sponsorship. They've been promised it for next year, but not for this year. So there's lots of moving parts for an executive MBA applicant typically, and so the somewhat last-minute nature of an application is kind of expected and is kind of built, at least at Cornell anyway, was built into kind of the admission cycle.
Okay, great. Gary presents an interesting question. The typical EMBA applicant seems to be in the late 30s and early 40s in age, and of course that very much relates to, Jen, your first slide. Any advice for the more experienced 50s?
Well, I mean, just be very convincing with why at this point in your career you need a degree. I will tell you that there was one applicant at Cornell, I believe he was 59 or 60 or something like that, and he was accepted to the program because he had a great reason for it. He had a fantastic background, and he was making some shifts in his career. I mean, and he was like, I'm going to work until I keel over dead. I'm not going to retire, and you know this is a goal that I've had for many years, and it's only now that I actually have the time to do it. And his experience and his reason for doing it were completely legitimate, and he ended up being a great participant in the program.
Great. I wonder if either one of you could tell us like what you felt was a really, I'm going to go at it a different way. What are some of the biggest mistakes you've seen in EMBA applications? Cindy, you want to go first?
Sure, I'm just trying to think. I would say, if I counsel people to do in their interviews, I would say not being able to differ, if you're applying to competitive programs, you know, just not being able to really articulate as compelling goals aside from that are just kind of going to do this, going to do that. I find that, you know, sometimes, I mean, you may have all the required parts, but it just isn't quite enough, and you really want to just push them to that, you know, push them to a more exciting level. Because the AdCom also sort of sees a reflection of you and how you present that and how you present your goals. So if it's kind of like applauding, you know, sort of, you know, very, you know, just logical, but nothing more than logical, it's sort of, you just want to do more than that. I find that particularly for the more competitive EMBA programs, you know, really adding those extra elements, actually, that I spoke about earlier, really can make a huge difference.
I think the thing that I always found the most frustrating, and what I talked about earlier on was, I mean, for Cornell, there's only one real question, and it's asked to be answered in 250 words or less, which is essentially, you know, what are your objectives for the program, what do you expect to contribute, and so on and so forth. And it was just so frustrating to have to read, I mean, that's 250 words, you have to be really succinct. And if the only thing that somebody conveys over time is, I really like the fact that it's a Saturday and Sunday program, because that was a differentiator versus NYU and Columbia, which were Friday-Saturday programs in the New York City area. And the fact that it's, you know, an overnight stay or whatever like that. Like, it was just so frustrating to be like, really? how can you possibly think that I would be interested in having you as part of the program when your sole motivator is the fact that it's a Saturday-Sunday program? You know, that's just, it's so, and they've never taken any time to actually come to an open house or see the program in action or talk to any of us. That was just a real turnoff.
It was very superficial.
Yeah, people who would come, you know, just because it was obvious they just kind of wanted to check the box, and Cornell was an Ivy League school, and, you know, that was why they wanted to come to the program. There was one time there was an applicant who had received his MBA from a school in India, and he wanted the Cornell name to put on his resume, and you know, he was not accepted to the program because we don't accept people who already have MBAs. He was like, well, there's an MBA from India, it's different. Like, well, let's compare the classwork. You know, it's exactly the same. And how can you guarantee to us that you're actually going to participate in the overall experience when this is all stuff you've already seen and done before? You know, what beyond this? So it's like things like that just are extremely frustrating when it's just this very superficial, well, of course I want to apply to Cornell because you're an Ivy League school and blah, blah, blah. It's really frustrating.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Before people leave, I don't know if this would be helpful or not, but there are lots of people who are looking at executive MBA programs and want to know the difference between why they should consider an executive MBA versus a full-time MBA. Because I'm a graduate of a full-time program and I also saw an executive program in action, I'd be happy if anyone wants to hear it, what my advice is or just my experiences with both programs and my overall opinion. I have found that prospective students who have worked with accepted.com do appreciate that, and I'm happy to take a couple minutes to answer
that. Sure, go ahead. You want to do it right now?
I'm just saying if people want to raise their hand, if it's helpful, then I'm happy to do it.
Yeah, no, they're chiming in on the question board.
Okay.
Can you tell me the difference? Please share. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty much universally asked of me at every information session I ever gave at Cornell, because I'm a graduate of the full-time program at Cornell and then, you know, came to see the executive MBA program. And in terms of an overall educational experience and ability to apply it to my career, if I had the stamina to do an executive MBA program, absolutely an executive MBA program is the way to go, because the ability to apply what you've learned immediately to your work is really priceless. In a full-time program, you know, you're learning something in a fall semester that maybe you'll be applying in an internship the following summer, and then finally in a full-time job 2 years, you know, almost 2 years later. By then, the skills have gotten somewhat rusty. If someone like me, they might have evaporated entirely over that time. So the ability to actually apply stuff in the workplace immediately is just—it's really just great in terms of overall your ability to retain, you know, the information. People who participate in executive MBA programs typically are highly motivated. They've reached a point in their career where they understand how valuable a network is, and therefore they're really good at, you know, kind of making those relationships with the folks who are in the program, with the academics who teach in the program, and really taking the time to get the most out of the overall experience. Now, obviously, in a full-time program, you have the advantage of, you know, kind of one thing that was really nice about being in a full-time program was kind of being able to appreciate not having to work. So I worked for 4 years full-time, and then suddenly it was like, wow, I'm back in college for 2 years, and woo, this is great. So kind of being able to fully enjoy kind of the social aspects of, and just the less harried nature, or, you know, well, I mean, not that school is unharried, but just a different kind of experience, and just kind of being able to relish it a little bit more. So, you know, the social aspects were certainly nice. But again, I mean, in terms of your overall educational experience, I think there's no better way to go than an executive MBA program. And I really do feel strongly about that, and I told people that time and time again, even when I was working at Cornell.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Cindy. Thank you, Jen, again. Thanks to our audience for your participation, your questions, your attendance, your time. I want to remind you one more time about the special offer. This is just for you. It's not advertised on the site. So jot down the coupon code EMBA100. The offer is good through February 28th. And you can click on any of these links to get more information about the services we have available for you, about our qualification, or to contact us. Thank you very much again. Please fill out the survey that you receive, and good luck with your executive MBA applications.